From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Voters could soon decide the future of solar power in Florida. Amendment 1 looks to add solar power to the state's constitution. But what does it mean for customers buying electricity or using solar panels? Coming up, we'll hear from both sides of the debate to understand what voting yes or no means when it comes to Amendment 1. Plus, a new play opening in Fort Myers next month takes a unique approach to telling the story of life after stroke. We'll hear from members of the production, a stroke survivor, and from medical experts helping survivors recover. But first, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Matthew Smith. Thanks for joining us. The Laboratory Theater in Fort Myers is tackling the issue of stroke in a new production of the play Wings by American playwright Arthur Coppett. Inspired by his own father's stroke, the play focuses on retired stunt pilot Emily Stilson, who suffered a stroke and embarks on an at times confusing and frustrating road to recovery. The theater is engaging audiences with unusual techniques to bring them into the world of a stroke victim and spurring discussion of an uncomfortable but all too common disease. Joining us to talk about the play and the medical issues surrounding stroke, we have Annette Trosbach, the director of Wings with the Lab Theater of Florida. Annette, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also from the play, we have Cindy Chase, the lead actor, who will be portraying stroke victim Emily Stilson. Cindy, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me as well.
And on the medical side of the stroke topic, we have in the studio Joe Ryan, the manager of rehabilitation services with Lee Health. Joe, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, pleasure.
And also from Lee Health on the phone, we have Dr. William Carasino, a neurologist who will tell us more about the disease that hospitalizes more than 200,000 Floridians each year. Dr. Carasino, are you with us? Dr. Carasino, are you there?
I'm sure. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, sir. Welcome to the program. Thank you very much.
Hi, thank you.
And finally, here in the studio, we have a stroke survivor or a stroke veteran, I understand, as he prefers to be called, Peter Sweat.
Thank you.
Peter, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm glad you used the term veteran because it takes away that little onus of self-pity. I like that.
Not a victim, but a veteran.
Right.
The survivor. All right. Well, we are looking at stroke and recovery and the portrayal in the play Wings that's coming to Fort Myers at the Laboratory Theater next month. Call in, share your experiences with stroke, and ask your questions to our guests. Our phone lines are open, 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And online, reach out to us on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. You can also tweet at us. Tweet your thoughts to @WGCU. Feel free to use that hashtag Gulf Coast Live. My first question is for you, Annette, the director of Wings. Tell us about what brought this play to Fort Myers and how you decided to portray the experience of a stroke for an audience.
It's a show the theater's been thinking about doing for a number of years, but it required a complete overhaul of our sound system because the show was very technically heavy with video, sound, and lights, and that's an expensive thing to do in a small theater such as ours. So it's thanks to a grant from the city of Fort Myers that we were able to overhaul our sound system and dedicate ourselves to this show.
And Cindy Chase, you portray Emily in the play. She has to learn how to use her body again and deal with the vivid memories of her life before the stroke. Tell us about how you prepared for this role and, you know, how did you go about that?
Well, it was very important to me to understand what a stroke veteran, as Peter describes it, has to go through, not only themselves but their families. So I decided to go to Lee County Health Systems over in Cape Coral, and I've been attending their therapy groups, speech therapy, and their physical therapy groups for 2 months, and luckily they've invited me in with open arms, and I've got to spend time with them to see, you know, many different ways that it, you know, it does affect people, you know, with different symptoms and how they have to battle this, where, you know, not only do they have to battle different avenues of speech that they can talk or different you know, where they can't talk, can't get the words out, you know, they're like trapped within themselves, but also with the public outside not understanding that their intelligence is there. You know, they're, a lot of these people, they want people to understand that they're trapped inside their body, you know. They want to get their words out, but they have difficulty. So that was a very important thing. And, you know, the author, Arthur Copit, you know, he really took a lot of time and took different people that he used to you know, make this character. So my thing is to play the best truthful, you know, in this part.
Right. And it sounds like an incredible amount of frustration to lose that ability and to maintain that faculty in your mind, but you're not able to interact and talk to people the way you used to.
No, because what happens is with this is in their mind, they can have everything clear, all their words, but then coming out of their mouth, the words are coming out backwards. Mm. So they're not able to control it, and they can't hear the same, you know, as what people are saying things. Things are not heard the same. And then they can't speak them the same as they're wanting to speak. So it is. It's frustration, and it's, you know, it's a lot of things that they have to overcome to get to a point where they do, you know, a lot of them do. And sometimes certain patients, you know, within a certain amount of time, where I think today's standards, that, you know, they grow within a year, 2 years, you know, that they can progress, you know. But with this character, the whole play takes like about a 2 year span from when she has a stroke to, you know, to the end of the play is about a 2 year span. So you really get to see from the time that it happens to her growth on going into, you know, being with other patients, being with the therapist, you know, working with people. And you can also see all the frustration. And then you see how she also tries to escape and retain what memory she does have of her life, because she used to be an aerial walker where she would fly a plane and walk out on the wing. So that's one piece of memory that she kept, because that is her escape. So,
and you dramatize that in the play, that kind of that vivid memory, mm-hmm, of a time before her stroke.
Right. That's part of the overwhelming sound and light and video display that our audience members will be treated to with the show.
I want to talk to Dr. Bill Carasino in just a moment, because he will be kind of giving us some of the medical dirt, as they say, about stroke. But, you know, I want to ask you, Peter, a stroke veteran.
Right.
Does that ring any bells of your experience and your recovery?
What specifically do you mean? What?
That sense of what Cindy was talking about, that road to recovery, that sense of relearning, that those vivid memories, that kind of thing.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, yeah. Relearning is – I'm still relearning. I still forget things. I have very little that I'm left with. So one of them is interestingly enough, is a time perception. You know, if you ask me to describe my experience, I'm not going to know how long I'm going on, for example.
Well, I know you just said don't ask you to describe it, but I'm about to.
Okay.
And
if
what
I go,
do you mean?
I'll make a deal with you then. If I go on too long, just get the hook, okay?
Sure. So when you find yourself telling a story or doing a task, you lose track of time? Is that right?
I still become confused. Another example, you know, if I could start out looking at my socks in my sock drawer and then wind up wondering what the hell I'm doing deadheading petunias. And if my wife says, "What are you doing deadheading petunias, Peter?" I say, "I'm not. I'm looking for my socks."
Right. Okay. So
it's confusion.
Disconnected in time almost.
Right. I forget what I'm doing, and this still happens.
I want to ask Dr. Carasino, who's with us on the phone, to help us focus exactly what happens in the body when there is a stroke. Dr. Carasino, tell us what happens and what are some of the warning signs everyone can be on the lookout for? Because I understand it's really up to intervention from a third party to make sure we get the stroke victim gets the treatment they need. Is that right?
Correct. So your question is actually is somewhat very open-ended as a good interviewer, and I'd have to be cautious about answering it. If your final pathway to cognition or consciousness is the brain, then theoretically almost any symptom could be a stroke. With that being said, and hopefully not too concerning for our listeners, but there are more common presentations of stroke, and the classical ones you've seen on the refrigerators and the billboards about the fast evaluation. So asymmetry of the face is a very common one, a droopy lower face usually. Arm weakness on one side or the other, including leg weakness, so it's motor strength on one side of the body. What Cindy was describing was aphasia, but there's also dysarthria. Dysarthria is like having marbles in your mouth and mumbling. The lips and the tongue just don't synchronize. What Cindy described was aphasia, and aphasia is language and speech. It's not speech so much as language, and it's expressed through a dysfunctional speech pattern. What Cindy started off describing was what we call expressive aphasia, where the individual knows what they want to say, but it comes out as very choppy, at times expletives, and mostly inadequate for their needs. Then she actually transitioned into describing what's called the receptive aphasia. And a receptive aphasia is where the patient might have normal language and cadence of a sentence. That is, the sing-song nature of a sentence might represent normal speech, but because the language processing feedback loop through the ear, the hearing, isn't there, they don't know what they're saying. And as she pointed out, they may not know what we're saying. So it's really not the loss of speech, but the loss of language. And that gets a little more complicated because language includes written language and calculations, including symbols such as stop signs and yield signs. Those are actually language processing. And then, of course, ambulation and dizziness, imbalance, difficulty in walking, or profound dizziness of one sort or another can also be stroke signs.
And I, before we get into kind of discussing the rehabilitation from stroke, Joe, that's we're going to ask you some questions there. I want to keep the questions with you, Dr. Carasino. When we talk about stroke, what is the prognosis? I mean, what impact does it have on people's bodies, but also their minds, I guess, short, mid, and long term?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a whole life study in some respects. But in prognosis can be a blended number. What I can tell you is that I've been in practice for almost 30 years now, 28 years since residency, and I've seen a massive transition. The prognosis in the past was very poor. We had very few tools in terms of our rehabilitation concepts were not as refined. Our techniques and medications were not as helpful. And even our focus was not there. We were very nihilistic about stroke care, and that stroke patients were many times put in a side room or the back room, and we didn't feed them aggressively. We didn't treat their blood pressure aggressively. So the whole philosophy of stroke care has changed. So I don't know that I can give a blended prognosis number that has any value to listeners, but I will tell you we've come a long way. And it's exciting to be part of this field because it really was discouraging and disappointing in the past and almost academic to look at a stroke patient. As a trained neurologist, I could tell you where the stroke was and what it affected, but I really couldn't offer significant hope to the stroke veteran, as he points out. I like that term, too.
Well, those sound like some dark days. Hopefully we can talk about some sunshine these days. Joe Ryan, the manager of rehabilitation services with Lee Health, I want to ask you about what recovery from stroke looks like. When does it begin? And I imagine we said at the top of the show that every stroke is different, so I imagine the road to recovery for every stroke victim is also different.
Yeah, it is much different. Specifically, I'm at Lee Health's Rehab Hospital, where we're a specialty stroke rehab program accredited by a few different commissions and associations. But basically, we get the stroke survivor as quickly as 4 or 5 days after the stroke happened. So once they come into the hospital, when they realize they're having a stroke, they get stabilized by all the physicians. And once they're safe to participate, there's no downtime. They go right into the program. And our program at Lee Health, it's a multi-pronged approach. There's not one person you go to rehab from stroke. The big three, so to speak, are physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy. And there's a whole lot of support other than that. I mean, you're going to need the support of nurses 24/7, We have a full-time psychologist on staff. There's a multi-prong approach, and it really does take everybody. Obviously, the most important person in the process is the patient, is the stroke survivor.
Let's talk about, if we could, some of those different aspects, mobility, mm-hmm. psychological. I know, like we said, it's not the same for everybody, but what are some of mm-hmm. the – what examples can you give us? What have you seen victims struggle with as they begin that road to recovery?
Right. Right off the bat, most people – and I don't know if it's just a natural reaction – is they want to walk again. But very quickly – you realize how much more is affected than just your walking. Really, what we look at, there's 18 categories of function that we sort of focus in on. It includes everything from eating, walking, getting dressed, everything like that, your personal care. And depending on what impairments the person has from the stroke, the rehab is going to fit that exactly. And it's really difficult to say, you know, what the outcome is going to be. There's a lot of things that go into it. The age of the person, how big was the stroke, what type of stroke was it, the support system the person has, the amount of motivation they have. Because, you know, you could be a very motivated person before, but the fact that your brain's been affected might change things.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have a stroke veteran in the room here mm-hmm. with Peter Sweat, and I'd like to ask you, sir, if you could just share with us some of your experiences that were unique to your recovery. And you mentioned your wife. Can you tell us a bit about how having your spouse along with you helped or caused issues of its own?
Well, the first thing I have to say is God bless the caregiver, man, because they really put up with it, and they really have to do with it. I mean, here's a person who had to put up with my constant confusion. I mean, I mentioned this the other night to you guys. I was sitting there, I would sit in my living room and just rock back and forth and trying to like you'd squeeze out a thought. That's all I was trying to wrap my hands wrapped around. I just couldn't think. I couldn't describe it any other way. There are no words to describe this feeling. I just was so frustrated in not being able to proceed from A to B to C. I finally got to that point. Don't ask my wife. But I think I'm okay now in terms of logical thought. And I can write.
Dr. Carasino, go ahead.
Can I add something? So what I heard in the last couple of minutes of discussion is something that is important, that stroke victims have both mechanical or functional disruption from the neural pathways that have damage from the lack of blood flow. But much of what was just described is the psychological or psychosocial, and you started talking about that too, Matt. The issue is that you recognize in different types of strokes, the incidence of depression can be up to 30%. And remember that depression can cause confusion. Depression can cause lack of energy. Depression can cause lack of motivation to become better in rehabilitation. So I've always found that one of the first things, and I know we do this at the rehab hospital, is to address the likelihood of depression based on scales, interviews, and abuses of medication. It's a big one. It's depression is big in the world, let alone in the stroke survivor population.
I just want to ask Dr. Carasino and also Peter if this applies to you. Is that depression that is a result of feeling that sense of isolation and the struggle to relearn communication, or is it literally damage to the brain, much like a traumatic brain injury, that changes the brain hardware and causes attendant depression?
So I would say probably both, but I'll help you with a little example. What's interesting is that, again, I said that the risk of a depression can be up to 30% in the appropriate stroke or individual. And the population and type of stroke that seems to have the highest degree of depression are the milder strokes in the younger individuals. So it's interesting that even a fairly mild stroke that would affect the functional status in a very mild fashion in a 40, 50, 55-year-old, or even younger, it causes significant depression. So that you ask yourself, is that reactional? Is that extrinsic? Is that something that the environment is imposing upon this patient as a depressive etiology, or is it intrinsic? Is it a disruption of neurochemical pathways that lead to depression? And from a neurologist's point of view, I'm not a psychologist or a neuropharmacologist, but you would expect that since it's such a mild stroke and such a maintenance sort of pathway, that you would expect that you wouldn't have a huge neuropharmacological change, and that would be more extrinsic, and that they'd be more upset or concerned about their future, their potential independence. So it's probably the answer to your question is it's a combination, but some of the points more toward as yet unknown.
We are approaching the end of our show now, and I just want to bring our focus on stroke and recovery back to the play that is coming to Fort Myers, Wings, that will be at the Laboratory Theater next month. Annette and Cindy, I understand that earlier this week, I believe it was Monday, you folks had a discussion with the cast and medical experts like Joe about stroke and recovery, and that might be something you hope to repeat after other shows. How did that go, and tell us about that?
It was great. We had a wonderful conversation, very enlightening, I think, for everybody. I certainly learned a lot, Cindy.
Yes, definitely learned a lot. And, I mean, I think it's going to be a great piece for the community to come, not only for people that have had this in their life, for people that haven't experienced.
And have no idea.
Have no idea because, you know, they'll understand by, you know, what this character is feeling by just all the preparation that's going into this, the sounds. There's going to be speakers coming. They're going to, the way this production is going to be played, they're actually going to feel like they're in Emily's head, in Emily's body, feeling all of those feelings of the paranoia, the, you know, the frustration, the, you know, resistance, the, you know, then the freedom, then the remembrance, then the blockage.
And unfortunately, we are running out of time. Thank you for sharing that idea of what we can expect in that play, Cindy. Peter, I want to leave the last word with you. Can you tell us briefly now, I'm sorry to say, but any final words for folks who are struggling with stroke, in recovery, thinking about coming to have this experience at the play?
Find what's funny about it, because there is a lot of stuff that's funny about it. And humor, and I'm a humor writer, so that goes hand in hand. But finding the humor in it, laughing at yourself, is going to help you survive.
All right. Thank you very much, folks. And I have to say, I'm sorry we're out of time. That is all the time we have for our show. And I would like to thank our guests. We have Annette Trosbach and Cindy Chase with the production of Wings coming to the Lab Theater in Florida next month. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also, from our medical experts weighing in on the phone, we had Dr. William Carasino, neurologist with Lee Health. Thank you, Dr. Carasino.
Thank you.
And from Lee Health, also, we had Joe Ryan with Rehabilitation Services. Joe, thank you.
Thank you.
And finally, our stroke veteran, Peter, thanks so much for joining us.
Great pleasure, Matt. Thank you.
The conversation for Gulf Coast Live does not end here. You can keep it going online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. That's where you can listen to this show and past episodes of the program. And you can keep the conversation going online. Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Thanks to my producers today, Richard Chinqui, AJ Leonard, Tara Callaghan, Callaghan, and John Davis. I'm Matthew Smith for Gulf Coast Live, and this is WGCU FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.